The apostles gathered round Jesus and reported to him all they'd done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then Jesus told them to make all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who'd eaten was 5,000.
Well, good evening, everyone. If we've not met before, my name is Tom. I'm one of the staff team here. Well, do keep that passage in Mark's Gospel open, and we'll come back to that in a moment. And this evening, I want to start by getting you to remember something. I want you to think of the last time you experienced a moment where everything was right with the world. When everything was right with the world. Maybe it was something as simple as the satisfaction of a job well done. Or walking in the countryside and the deep peace that comes from hearing the birds singing in the trees and the cares of the day-to-day life are forgotten. Well, that maybe that moment over Christmas when the family's back together and you are when you are just having a wonderful time, when people know us and get us and we can experience the satisfaction of feeling entirely comfortable with who we are and where we are. I wonder, when was the last time you felt that sensation? It's a precious thing, isn't it? And we hold on to those moments as special memories because so often that moment of contentment, that moment of satisfaction is fleeting. It's here and then something changes and it disappears. The holidays end, the peace we've been enjoying gets broken and it doesn't last. We long for it to come again. And we long for it because our hearts are designed to enjoy that lasting true satisfaction. We were designed by God in his world to enjoy that peace. But the reason we don't is because the world is broken as a result of our sin. And so satisfaction is hard to come by. And even when we do find it, it doesn't last. And the trouble is humanity spends its time hunting for this peace in the wrong places, endlessly searching but never finding the satisfaction that is supposed to be ours. But our passage from Mark's Gospel gives us the Bible's answer for where to find satisfaction, where to find this true peace. And so if we are longing for peace, if we're longing for the world to feel right, then we've got to pay attention to these words because they change everything for us. And it's very simple. Let me give it to you in one sentence. If we come to Jesus, we'll find true satisfaction. Let me say that again. If we come to Jesus, if we let Jesus lead our lives, we will find true satisfaction. Now, you might be thinking, hold on a minute, Tom. I thought this story was about Jesus feeding 5,000. I heard this story in Sunday school or when I was a child, and I thought it was all about fish finger sandwiches. How is this about our heart's longing for finding true satisfaction? Well, just like the other miracles in Mark's gospel, Jesus feeding 5,000 points to deeper spiritual realities. It tells us who Jesus is. It tells us that he's God, because only God can miraculously provide for people. But it tells us also how God provides everything we need. We'll see that just as Jesus can supply these people's physical needs, so he can supply everything else we need to thrive. And Mark shows us two things that we struggle with first. He shows us that we're lost without God, and that we all worry that God won't be enough. But then he shows us that Jesus can provide what we truly need. So let's look again at Mark 6. And the first thing we see at page 1009, if you've closed your Bibles, is that we're all lost without God. Let me read again from verse 30. The apostles gathered round Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. Now, we've just had an interlude in Mark's gospel. We've just had, if you're here last week, you had the story of what happened to John the Baptist and King Herod. The disciples, prior to that, they've been sent out on a mission. And they've been out in the towns and villages of Galilee. They've been preaching and teaching and healing. And many people have heard, and even more still want to hear. And so there's no peace for the disciples. It's so busy, they are so pressured that they can't even find a space to grab a sandwich. And so Jesus says, enough's enough. It's time to go and rest. And so he leads them away to a quiet place, a desert place, so that they can refresh them. And so that's what they do. They jump on the boat. They disappear over the lake to go and find some peace. But it's not going to be that straightforward. Look on in verse 33. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw the large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. They're literally chased by the crowd. They disappear over the lake, and people have just been legging it from wherever they were to try and meet Jesus. They're so excited that they follow him into the wilderness. Now, people have heard Jesus' teaching. They've seen his miracles, and they're thinking, well, maybe this is the one. Maybe this is the king who's come to rescue us. They've been waiting for a king. The Old Testament promised that a king was going to come who was going to rescue and lead their people. And so they've seen all that Jesus has done. They've heard the wisdom that he's been teaching with. And the time is now. And I think that's why Mark highlights how many men specifically were there in verse 44, the last verse of our reading. These people gathering in the wilderness, well, they're waiting for a rebellion to start. This is the revolutionary army gathering to follow their king. But the thing is, Jesus isn't here for that sort of rebellion. He's not here for a revolution. He sees the people coming into the wilderness, and rather than being inspired to lead them like some Braveheart type figure, he has compassion on them. He loves them. He cares for them because they're like sheep without a shepherd. Now, the Bible regularly calls people sheep, and it's simultaneously flattering and humbling. Because a sheep is a valuable thing. You know, if you own a sheep, it's something you look after. It's a valuable animal. they're worth a lot of money. It's something you invest in, you take your time in, you take it to the vet and all that sort of stuff. But being called a sheep is also a humbling thing, because a sheep can't protect itself. You know, if you go for a walk in the countryside, you don't see signs up saying, "Beware the sheep." And no, sheep need protecting from everything else. And sheep can't lead themselves. They're experts in getting lost and of not being able to find their way home. I used to live in an area that was known for its sheep farming, and the farmers in the congregation were forever being called out to go and rescue their sheep from unlikely situations. Like, you wouldn't believe that you'd just be driving down the road and suddenly there'd be a load of sheep in front of you. It was both immensely frustrating. Well, it was frustrating for everybody, both the people driving and everybody else. Sheep need leading by a shepherd. They can't do it by themselves. Sheep without a shepherd are in trouble. And sadly, this is the picture that the Bible uses to describe you and I. Valuable, but in trouble without a shepherd. When we're away from God, we are like that sheep without a shepherd. We're lost and frankly in danger. We're not able to thrive as we ought to. We were designed to live in God's world under God's gentle and kind rule. But when we're away from him, well, we suffer. We aren't able to be the people that we're supposed to be, that we were designed to be. And one way of telling the story of the whole Bible is that it's a search for the true shepherd of God's people. It's a theme that's been running right from the very beginning. Back right in the very beginning of the Bible, when the first great leader of God's people, Moses, was alive, when he comes to the end of his life, he prays for God's people. And this is what he prays. "May the Lord, the God who gives breath to all living things, appoint someone over this community to go out and to come in before them, one who will lead them out and bring them in so that the Lord's people will not be like sheep without a shepherd." Being without that shepherd is a bad thing. They need someone to lead them, someone to show them God's way. Otherwise, they're like sheep without a shepherd. And so over the course of the Bible's story, different leaders are appointed. And some are good. And they lead God's people well for a time, but then they grow old and die. And God's people eventually end up wandering away. Other shepherds are appointed and they're bad. And God's people are led away from God by unfaithful shepherds. And so eventually God says to his people through the prophet Ezekiel, he says these words, "This is what the sovereign Lord says. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them." He says, "Enough's enough. We can't be doing with this anymore. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them." God will lead his people. He will shepherd them because we're all like sheep and we need a better shepherd to lead us. Someone who won't suffer from the same temptations that we all feel to turn away from God. Someone who won't die. Someone who will lead us. Because we're lost on our own without God. And that's why when Jesus, the Son of God, comes, rather than leading them in revolution, he teaches them many things about God. I don't know if you noticed that. It's surprising, isn't it? He has compassion with them. He sees that they're sheep without a shepherd. And so he began teaching them. Again, in Mark's gospel, rather than doing all the kind of miraculous miracles and showing all sorts of whizzy wonderful things, no, Jesus teaches them. He shows them the leader they really need. He gently guides them back to the true shepherds of their souls, the one they really need. The way to overturn the world is to know the one who will truly guide them home. But the thing is, we might be thinking, hold on a minute, I don't feel very lost. I've got a plan for my life. I know where I'm going. How can you say that I'm lost? The thing is, as we were thinking about at the beginning, we're all longing for that satisfaction. We're all longing for things to be right. And this longing is a longing to be in the place where we feel comfortable, where the world is as it's supposed to be. Because actually we are that sheep without a shepherd. And each of us, well, we try to do something about it. It's something that we all try to satisfy, but with different things. You know, some of us will try and satisfy our lives, to fill that longing to have our job lead us. And it sounds silly when you say it out loud, but we all try and do it. We'll pour our heart into our work, and it'll work a little bit. But eventually, if we pour ourselves into our work in that way, our job will consume us. Because it was never designed to truly satisfy, to truly bring us that peace. Others of us will pour ourselves into our relationships. We'll do everything we can for the guy or the girl of our dreams. And we'll long for them to truly satisfy us. But eventually it'll disappoint. Because even the best relationship ends in death. Whatever it is we look to, it won't work because it was never designed to be able to really fill us up, to be able to truly satisfy us. It can never give us all that we want. It's why in the first autobiography ever written, a wise Christian who had tried everything else in life to satisfy, he wrote these words. He came to God and said, "You, God, have made us for yourself, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." Our heart is restless. You know that? We know that sensation, don't we? Because we're like sheep without a shepherd. We're restless until we rest in God's. But even once we recognize that we need God to lead us, this isn't easy. Because secondly, we all fear that God is not enough. And let's read on, verse 35. "By this time, it was already late in the day. So his disciples came to him. 'This is a remote place,' they said, 'and it's already late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat.'" And Jesus has been teaching the people. And you can kind of see the picture, can't you? You've got the disciples kind of sat around Jesus. They're seeing him teach. And eventually one of them starts looking at his watch and thinking, "Jesus is getting on a bit. Come on, Jesus. Time to wrap up now. Time to wrap up. Come on." And they're getting sort of increasingly twitchy. And they're saying, "Well, look, Jesus, come on. It's great that you've been teaching the people. Clearly they've loved it. They've really been lapping it up. You've been a real hit, Jesus. It's time to finish now. It's time to finish because it's getting late, everyone's getting hungry, and we definitely don't want to be the ones on the hook for providing dinner. Enough's enough, it's time for everyone to go home." This is a remote place, again, this is the desert place, remember that, we'll come back to that in a minute. There's no supermarket nearby. The supermarkets aren't a thing in the ancient world, there's definitely no supermarket in the desert. And it's not like you can just dial up Deliveroo and be like, "Right guys, we need enough pizzas for 5,000 men and women and children, please." You can't do it. And so what they're saying sounds pretty reasonable, doesn't it? But this is where the things take turn for the weird. Verse 37, they say, "Come on, time to send everyone home." Verse 37, "But Jesus answered them, 'You give them something to eat.' And they said to him, 'That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?'" Jesus doesn't want to leave these people shepherdless, and so he tells the disciples to give them some food. And the disciples are understandably incredulous. How can we give everyone some food? You know, they're looking at this massive crowd of people, and they think, "Well, we can't possibly do this." You know, they see the bill for this coming, and they're like, "Right, this is going to be about 20 grand. We can't possibly do this." And in their horror, Jesus turns to them and says, verse 38, "How many loaves do we have?" "What?
How many loaves do we have? Go and see. And they find out, 5 loaves and 2 fish. I think sort of bread roll, not, you know, baguette, but bread roll. It's farcical, isn't it? This is ridiculous. They've got 5 bread rolls, they've got 2 fish, and 5,000 men, let alone women and children as well. This is barely enough for a single adult, let alone thousands of hungry people in the middle of nowhere. There's no shops, no food, no money. How on earth are the disciples supposed to do this? But ask yourself this. Why does Jesus ask them to feed these people? Is Jesus just joking around? Is Jesus just going to be like, I got you guys. No. Is he trying to make them feel small? Trying to make them feel weak? No. That doesn't sound like Jesus, does it? Jesus asked them because they will feed the people. All of the people who are there will eat and will be satisfied. The trouble is the disciples can't see how it's going to happen. And this is something we all fear. Because there's part of each of us that worries. If we give ourselves wholeheartedly to God, if we take God at his word and trust him, we'll end up like these disciples. That we too will be in the equivalent of a desert without enough to feed everybody. We fear that God won't be enough. Now, let me ask a question. It might sound a bit of a random one, but bear with me. How long does the average person spend on social media each day? Anyone want to have a guess? 3 hours? Any advance on 3 hours? 5 hours? Wow, blimey. The answer is, apparently across the whole world, the average is 151 minutes, which is what, 2 hours, 31 minutes. So slightly less, but it's been steadily climbing each year. They've done this survey every year since 2012. 2 hours and 31 minutes. Now that's a long time, isn't it? But that's not going to be 2 hours and 31 minutes of constantly posting stuff or constantly like commenting on other people's posts. Actually, most of that 2 hours and 31 minutes is going to be endlessly scrolling through whatever social media feed and social media network you prefer. So why do we do it? Are we that desperate to see other people's lives? Not really. I think we keep scrolling because we don't want to miss out. We don't want to miss out on the latest viral trends or who said what to whom or who's out partying together. We never phrase it this way, but we fear that if we don't go on social media, somehow we'll be less. And the trouble is that we have the same fear when it comes to choosing between following God and following the world. That if we follow God rather than doing what everyone else is doing, we'll be less. That God won't be enough for us. We fear that if we follow Jesus' teaching on love and sex, that we'll be missing out in our relationships. We fear that if we forgive others, we'll be trodden all over. We fear that if we give away our money like Jesus tells us to, then we're not going to have enough for ourselves. We fear that if we don't prioritize our work, we'll miss out on other opportunities. If we don't commit to God fully, well, we fear that we're going to miss out. We fear that God won't be enough for us. And if you've ever thought those things, if that's ever felt that the same, then you're not alone. Because we all fear that. And we've always feared that. Right back from the very beginning. It's what we all fear. So will God be enough? Let's read on. Verse 39. Then Jesus told them to make all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. And all the people sit down in groups in the wilderness, and we're supposed to be hearing echoes of what Ruth read for us a few minutes ago, of God's people in the Old Testament. They too were in a desert place with no food. They too were in groups of 50s and hundreds. Verse 41. Then taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. Jesus gives thanks for the loaves and the fish. He breaks them into pieces, and somehow, miraculously, as he gives the pieces to the disciples, well, the pieces just keep coming. And everyone eats. Not just a morsel to keep body and soul together, but so much that they eat and they're satisfied. There's an abundance of food for everyone who wants to eat, and there's an abundance of leftovers, far more than they started with. And we're supposed to think back to that a reading that Ruth read for us a few minutes ago, because there, God said, "This is how you will know that I am God." Because only God can do something like this. Only God can feed a mass, an army, a nation from nothing. Jesus is God. And the disciples do exactly what Jesus said they would. They feed the people. They need to feed until there's 12 basketfuls left over. He provides not just what they needed, but leftovers too. And this is something that we all need to pay attention to. Now, in the 4 different life stories, the 4 gospels of Jesus' life in the Bible, there are only 2 miracles that come up in each gospel. There's Jesus' death on the cross and resurrection on the 3rd day, and there's the feeding of the 5,000. I don't know if that feels strange to you. I find it unusual. This story is included in each story because we need to know that Jesus will provide what we truly need. And there's a deeper link between these stories too, because at the Last Supper, that final meal Jesus has on earth, when he's explaining his death to his disciples, Jesus does the same things and uses the same language as he uses here. There, Jesus takes the bread and gives thanks for it. And he says, "This is my body." And then he takes the cup of wine and gives thanks for it. And he says, "This is my blood." And then he distributes it. He gives it out to them. And the bread and the wine help us remember and understand that he gave his life to give us all that we need. With his body and his blood, he pays for our sins and restores our lives with his own. He gives himself, he breaks himself, so that we have all that we need. He broke himself on the cross so that we might be satisfied in our relationship with others, because Jesus has already given us everything we need to thrive. He broke himself on the cross so that we might be forgiven by God and have peace with him. So we can forgive and have peace with others. He broke himself on the cross so that we might be provided for and therefore provide for others out of our abundance. At the cross, Jesus gave himself so that we have everything we need and can find true satisfaction with God. We need not fear. We will have everything we need in him. All these people in the wilderness were looking for Jesus to bring them revolution. But the revolution he brought wasn't the one they expected, but it is the one we most need. When we come to Jesus, he turns and changes our lives so that we are truly at peace, so that we can find the satisfaction that we all desperately crave. As we joyfully and truly give ourselves to following Jesus fully, we'll receive the peace that passes understanding. So, friends, let's recognize that we can't find our way on our own without God. We're lost without him. But let's not fear to come to God, because Jesus can provide all that we need. Whatever we're looking for, Jesus can give us enough to give us that deep and lasting satisfaction. So come to Jesus for rest here and now, and a peace that lasts forever into eternity.